A Baccalaureate Sunday Sermon, preached by Reverend Richard A. Rem at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on June 5, 1994, entitled, The Spirit and a World to Love. The scripture readings are Isaiah 58, verses 6 through 12, and Acts 1, verses 6 through 8. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 58, verse 12, and Acts 1, verse 8. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
In the prophecy of Isaiah, the 58th chapter, in the 12th verse, we have this wonderful image, this picture of those who would turn to their neighbor and love their neighbor, love their world on behalf of God. For those, it is said, your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundation of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. And on this weekend in which we are mindful again and again of that which happened 50 years ago in our world, the D-Day invasion, the invasion on the Normandy beaches, and that dark hour in world history when we and the Allied nations rose up on behalf of freedom and human dignity, we cannot but help but think of that text in terms of that mission that was executed by those who love freedom, the democratic nations. It's incredible to relive it again. I'm amazed to think that I am about as young as one can be and still have some personal remembrance. Just a little kid, but a couple of brother-in-laws over in the thick of it, remembering the adult conversations about it, feeling some of the anxiety and the tension of those days. That was a noble hour. I think in my earlier experience, I tended to compartmentalize my religious or spiritual experience from that which happened in the world. But I recognize more clearly now that the Spirit of God, the breathing of God, is not restricted to what happens in a setting like this, but happens in the larger landscape of the world. And I believe that that noble effort to maintain the best of Western civilization, the freedom and the democracy of the world, was a response to the Spirit of God. There's a sense in which we were loving the world in the power of the Spirit, in that we were engaged in an effort for human freedom. But as I was thinking about that image of the prophet, he said, you will restore the ancient ruins and foundations, and you will be a repairer of the breach. You will create cities and streets to dwell in. That image of the prophet is so characteristic of the Hebrew prophet, who had images of shalom, of that messianic age when Messiah would come, when there would be harmony and peace in the world. And as I was reflecting on that text in the context of this weekend, I came across this document written by Rabbi David Hartman. Rabbi Hartman, the one who was in Muskegon a month or so ago. And it's about the present Israeli-Palestinian peace process. And Rabbi Hartman is striking a blow here for openness to let that process happen. But in the midst of this document, he says this: no period in history is immune to the forces of regression. And then he quotes and quotation marks. It can never happen here. Here, tolerance, pluralism, and decency are firmly established and secured. And to that he responds, against such expressions of naivete and false complacency stands the classical statement of biblical realism, "Behold, I have put before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life." As I was thinking about that, I thought, I've heard veterans interviewed in the documentaries that are on the television these days, some who've said, there'll never be another battle like it. There'll never be another naval assault like it, and so forth. And all of those statements are true in the sense that the world and technology that happened at that time has been so greatly overcome. You think about sending coded messages across the channel. You think about the surprise element that was able to be affected and that massive movement of armaments and men and women. You realize today that our spy satellites circle the globe and from outer space track the movement of armaments and armies so that there's a sense in which Normandy could never happen again. But then I read David Hartman and I recognize how easy it could be to become complacent and to say that that was the world's hour of darkness and it could never happen again. And that is not true. Darkness and evil is lurking always in the wings of the human experience. And if our technology has made it impossible ever to duplicate the Normandy invasion, so our technology has enabled us in an instant to wipe out masses of population more than all who have died in all the wars of human history. If North Korea has a bomb, and if it would loft it over the demilitarized zone, in an instant, it could wipe out more persons than in all of World War II. And so, I read a little more from Rabbi Hartman, who says those beautiful prophetic images are not images of what will be at the end, but rather they are possibilities of what needs yet to be realized within history. They are not a statement of historical inevitability. They are a statement of present possibility. And the call of God to God's people is to join God's Spirit in the creation of justice and righteousness and shalom. Those wonderful images of the prophet, "They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. The lion and the lamb shall dwell together. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. They shall learn war no more." Those images from the Hebrew prophet are images that are to call us up short and to present us with an alternative reality, an alternative possibility. We are called as the people of God not to sit by and wait for history to run its course when Messiah will come and shalom will cover the earth. We are called to be the instruments and the agents of shalom, of justice, of peace, of righteousness, right here and now. We are called through the power of the Spirit of God to love the world. The God who revealed, whose heart was revealed in the face of Jesus Christ, and whom the followers of Jesus experienced as still present with them and powerfully present, is the God who continues to move through the landscape of history and is a part of the human scene and calling us to join in the cause of justice and righteousness leading to peace. The one true and eternal God, the God of Israel, shown to us in Jesus, continues to breathe through us, to empower us to be the instruments of peace and the channels of grace in our day. People of Judah in exile had a complaint against God. They said, look, we're religious. We worship. We fast. We go through sacrifice and ritual. But you don't notice. The answer through the prophet is, that's not the fast I choose. The fast I choose is to set the prisoner free, to take off the yoke of oppression, to feed the hungry, to take the homeless into your home. Then your light will break upon you. Then you will call, and I will answer, and I will say, here I am. In other words, in this Old Testament understanding of things, the service of God is the service of humankind. And the worship of God is the care and love of the neighbor. And Jesus knew this passage. Someone has said that Matthew 25 must have been written right out of Isaiah 58. Matthew 25, the parable of the sheep and the goats. They said to him to whom he had said, come into the kingdom. They said, when did we see you hungry? When did we visit you in prison? When did we clothe you? Jesus said, inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. There's always a tendency to compartmentalize religion into one little part of life and then to get on with life in a kind of secular fashion as though God is divorced from that. Not so. God says, do whatever rituals you need. Do whatever worship you need. Go into the temple if you will. Offer sacrifices if you will. Take bread and cup if you will. Do what you need in order to be conscious of my presence. But if you really, really want to know my presence in power, then take care of your neighbor, the poor, the oppressed, the homeless. Then, miraculously, in your neighbor, you'll find me. You cannot find me this way, only this way. And if you don't believe that Jesus knew this prophet, then just turn a couple of pages to the 61st chapter of the same prophet, a couple chapters later. And you'll find there, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me and has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners. And if you go to the 4th chapter of Luke and the 18th verse, you'll find in the inaugural sermon of Jesus in his hometown in Nazareth, the sermon that got his family and friends so upset with him, he cited those words. The agenda of Jesus was to set the prisoner free, to effect human dignity and human freedom. The mission of the church, the calling of the people of God, is to love the world for God's sake. If we would follow the way of Jesus, then we must take Jesus seriously. This is what Jesus was about. I must admit to you, at first I entitled this message, The Spirit and World Mission. But I changed it. Because for me, world mission spoke too much of my past understanding, where I would send this graduating class out into the world to preach the gospel in order to make the world Christian. But now I want to say to you graduates, if you want to know God in power, in fresh experience, love the world. Care. Be filled with compassion. Give your life away. And in giving your life away, find your life and the presence of God. That's the paradox, isn't it? Jesus said, go into all the world. Proclaim good news. The good news that Jesus proclaimed, that God is near, that God is full of grace, that God is for human dignity, for human freedom, for the fullest realization of the human potential of all people. It is the calling of the church not to convert the world, but to love the world and let the consequences be in God's hands. To allow the breath of God to flow through us, empowering us in an outpouring of ourselves in love for a world so desperate for love and grace. I once thought that finally the world would become Christian and then Messiah would come. Now I don't know so much about all of that. But this I understand clearly. Messiah has come. And the Spirit is moving. And I am invited to follow in the way of Jesus in loving the world. And therein, know the presence and the power of God. A messianic age is not a historical inevitability. It is an ever-present possibility if we dare to love the way Jesus loved. That's why we're in Romania. That's why we're in Wales. That's why we're in Africa. That's why the world is our parish. To love the world for God's sake.